thank you for coming. I was at the stall in on Saturday reading poems, so it's been a lot of travel, a lot of drinking, a lot of poetry, but more drinking. So I'm a bit shaky today, but hopefully it'll get through. Before I go through my poems, The Behemoth is out on, it's online on Friday the 5th, and then we're having an event to, it's not actually to mark the launch, it's just to have an event to celebrate that we're still going after 2 years.
Do some drinking.
Basically, yeah, we have like, we actually started the after party and the after after party before we actually started the venue for the original thing, so you can tell our priorities. So that's happening in Dublin Derby. So if you look up Behemoth or look up my name, you should be able to find links to the factory. So yeah, I'll get on with my poems now. The first two poems are part of a sequence that I'm interested in, kind of how cinema and the stock characters in cinema, how the characters become the, get placed onto the actors who play them. And I've noticed this happening a lot. There's been a trend where actresses have become, the roles they're playing in films are actually really good, but themselves in real life, they kind of get typecast. So I'm kind of playing with that idea, and it's from the kind of sequence poems, and I'm going to read two of them. So it's called, this first one's called Ingenue, Part 1, Hollywood's Newest. Those laying eyes on Imogen White for the very first time are advised to savour the moment, because before you know it, the girl will be everywhere. The ravishing 21-year-old actress with the dark, smouldering gaze and charming restraints is largely unknown outside her native England. But 2000 will herald her transformation into a star. Just 1 year ago, young Imogen was acting in an off-Broadway play as a boy, no less. Yet now, from a distance, she has all the trappings of a rising Hollywood starlet. The newly blonde hair, the thin frame, the bee-stung lips. There will be more films to follow, of course, and magazine covers, red carpet promenades, and paparazzi scrums, chat shows, and luxury ad campaigns. But for now, she's fresh. The gorgeous and prodigiously talented newcomer. The one you've never heard of. So this is the third part where she's aged significantly. It's called Ingenue, Part 3, Parisian Hotel Interview. Imogen White is an unusual star. Her allure has given her time to develop as an actress. Now 29, she's still most known for a single role, playing Tom Cruise's girlfriend, and famously shunned the limelight. And yet there is something about her breakthrough character, the wide-eyed gaming do-gooder, that continues to define her. A character actress trapped in an ingenue's body. Imogen is determined to leave the girlfriend parts behind. I think that as I get older, I'm looking at roles that move away from that mould, and are more based on women that I've experienced and have had a life before the stage you find them in. Giving up the cutesy doll-eyed show was a smart move. Its appeal was wearing thin for those keen observers who were well aware that she was in on the industry's secret handshake. The extraordinary thing about White is that whatever she's wearing today, it's an ivory and licorice jumpsuit that accentuates her tiny frame. You can't help but focus on her eyes, which really are as black and as hypnotic as on screen. Imogen White is not simply another actress, but rather one who is learning to succeed by perfecting the art of playing herself. I did about 2 years ago, there was a small festival that used to take place in Enniscrone, where a bunch of young lawyers got together to basically talk about riding, but mainly drink, as you say, this kind of was. And then some of us ended up going off to London to do a reading as well, more drink. But it was kind of the whole kind of experience kind of coalesced together and kind of formed this poem. This is called "I Am Your Refrigerator at 3 a.m. when you are hungry." I could not consume the stars above the beach in Enniscrone, or stop the soot of London mixing with Camden Coke. In different seasons, love is ice cream. We want to lick our favourite flavour all year, even if it makes us sick. I give you a call and you come over. We watch a Werner Herzog documentary, Cave of Forgotten Dreams, about simple drawings of extinct animals. One of us says, "Do you think the artist ate the art, or the art ate the artist?" We know the beginning and the end before we press play. We consume designer drugs not designed for us, our bodies separated by a punnet of mixed berries, the colour of our bruises. You sprinkle sugar over everything. The clumps of sugar on my sheets remind me of the stars above the beach. We both have our flaws to share. We eat the air's empathy-flavoured existence. In the morning, you'll say, "I just ate a Special K cereal breakfast bar," when what I really wanted to eat was pepperoni pizza. I'll say, "I want to be 10 years older, eating Dauphinoise potatoes for dinner and apple pie and cream for dessert." In a month, you'll confess your sins over Sunday lunch, across the table at the cafe, croissant crumbs will stick to our forearms. Tonight, you stroke the scar on my thigh inscribed by a firework. You touch my scar to touch my past. You comfort my past when you fear you cannot comfort my present. You comfort me to comfort yourself. When we wake, you say, "I spilled the sugar." I say, "I know. I could taste it on your elbows." This is kind of cinema one as well, again. This is called "I Want a New Cinematic Romance, Part 1. There is no part 2.
Not yet.
In bed, I text you, in brackets, how I really feel. It's our Annie Hall on the balcony subtitle scene. How modern, how lonely, however. I don't want those to become people who do their drugs in the bathroom, even when they are at home, alone. Let's not kiss like Alfred Hitchcock characters at the end of films, when all the suspense is. Sorry, it's just like, I noticed this happens a lot. Hey, you don't have to clap after every poem.
No, I know.
It's fine. No, it's fine. Like, some people don't know where to clap, so you just wait till the end. And if you don't want to clap then, that's fine. You're really mean, but it'll be fine. This is called "Pouring Salt Is For The Fault." S and I sit on opposite sides of the diner's booth, waiting for food, for coffee, for a strawberry milkshake, for conversation. For a few fleeting seconds, the realness becomes visible as our breath steams up the windows, decorated with fake winter, mist and snow. The mirror behind her head is full of empty spaces and faces of shoppers only in the city for the day is over. The Christmas lights are on, the diner speakers sing the same old song. Bess admires the owl she's made and offers me the remnants that still stick to her fingers. I lick, expecting sugar. Grimace. "This is salt," I say. "It always is," S says. Another S poem. This is called "Fragments of S." This is all kind of stemmed from, I had a kind of relationship with a girl, and I did that thing when it ends badly, you have kind of all the, you know, texts or pictures, so you look through them all. In a really kind of tragic way. But I got a poem now, so that's, you know, amazing. Fragments of S. Is a montage a picture of pixels of moments of you with two red bulls and the world's favourite love poems on the green of Hampstead Heath with fresh strawberries, covered in white chocolate, your arm around your sister. This is England's styled bad poses in the ladies' dressing room. Deep red lips contrast the bright blue dress you wear, offsetting auburn hair. Darkly painted fingernails captured, blurred in the motion of rat-a-tat-tatting the teacup, as white as the bubbles next to your red raw skin, but brighter than a Santa Claus bat bomb. Before the explosive effervescence, you lie seductively with a panda bear sweater, green and pink dinosaur socks on top of your bed, your legs crossed, your eyes closed, pretending to sleep for cinematic romance with no sequel. There's a lot of food in here actually. This is another food comment. This is called "It's Tuesday and I'm Eating Chicken Katsu." Alone, waiting for a friend, I infinitely scroll through Tumblr on my phone. On a certain Monday, there exists a slightly opaque picture of you in a blue dress, your hands tightly held around the waist of a McDonald's milkshake on the escalator descending into the underground tube station. My friend arrives after I finished eating. Outside the new Asian restaurant is the old Dublin street. Two men mock battle, both calling the other sensei. Could it be true? It's Wednesday now. In my pocket, on my phone, on a certain Monday, there exists a picture of you in a blue dress, still. This is called Experiences. Have I been stung by a wasp outside the Italian takeaway under the neon sign that spells out ROMA in pink and blue and reminds me of Miami in the 1980s? Or did I tell you about the guy who was watching The Shawshank Redemption on his MacBook in the emergency room while I waited for my mom after she had stopped breathing in the ambulance? And anyway, how authentic an experience do you think you can have in the cavernous college hallways below a multinational coffee house? Because sometimes you just want to eat chicken without a side order or reality. This was originally like a 5,000 word story that I couldn't get to work, and then I transitioned over and became a poet, and it's now like that size. A lot of editing on this. It probably doesn't show, I should have said it. This is called Pinata People. Before the sun had broken through the morning clouds, a man walking his dog along the strand spotted himself in the distance. His papier-mâché face and torso jutted up from out of the sand. The man's dog whimpered at the sight of his master. The man could see that further on down the beach there were other similar figures. His curiosity overtook him. He jostled and uprooted himself. He could hear something inside of him moving. The centre of his chest seemed to be the softest point. He stamped three times and broke into his other self. Onto the sand he poured contents. Amongst the sweets and colourful pieces of paper was a note with his name written on it. After reading the note, the man walked from the beach into the town, telling whoever he passed, "Find your piñata before someone else does." I was diagnosed with epilepsy when I was 9, and I'm lucky that I don't actually have it too bad. I've only had like a couple of major seizures, but I've never been able to write anything about it. I'm not going through any issues with it just because it all sounded kind of too like tragic. I put it too like all for me. Eventually I decided to do a villanelle because the structure of villanelle I thought works well with the repetitive nature of seizures. So this is called "I Sing the Body Epileptic." They tell me my mind is too electric to own the moments I alone will miss. Still, I sing the body epileptic. Here 1 minute, gone the next. Magic trick. I can hear my inner illusionists. They tell me my mind is too electric The trigger could have been the bright lights flick that caused my eye to twitch, my tongue to twist still by seeing the body epileptic. Again, my limbs performed their loudest stick, but to be looked upon is not my wish. They tell me my mind's too electric. Each seizure could be over all too quick, or so prolonged it might never desist. Still, I sing the body epileptic. I will never tell myself I am sick, not even if after the millionth fit they tell me my mind is too electric. Still, I sing the body epileptic. This is called In London It Is. Curious how showering with baby wipes in a toilet cubicle the night after whiskey healed the wounds cratered into you by Jaeger bombs makes you think of a David Foster Wallace essay. Tonight, you'll eat spring rolls while walking through winter air that comes from you and is already behind you because you're feeling late and moving too fast. Fingerprint grease on the pages of your poems will historicize the moment. This is called, this has a little epilogue from a different poem by Sam Revere. This is called Eve or the Course of Darkness. In this moment, she is less like a motive, more like a crime. We see her in the distance, center screen, crossing the footbridge over the vein-like stream, separating woods from woods. The mise-en-scene is dreamy and nightmarish, Russian violet, midnight blue, ghost white. No colour is its own. The stream reflects light from the unseen moon. It filters through the mist. Her body is the brightest thing. Her dress and skin merge. She is advancing, moving from left to right, from background to foreground. She has a certain kind of gravity. The trees behind her bend to follow. Those ahead shy away. Her gaze, though blurred, is fixed on us. This is I have insomnia, which often results in me staying up to see the sun again, and coming up with kind of mad things to, like one idea will trigger another idea, which will trigger another idea, until I forget the original idea. This poem is kind of the basis of that. It's called Connotations or Attempts. Haunt me like a muse, Penelope Cruz, the Rubik's Cube. I spent hours twisting and turning, but never solved, because that was never the point. It started in medias res and high res. The attempt to connect is just as important as the connection. Honeycomb. Now whenever anyone mentions croissants, I immediately think of Kanye West, then France, then cheese, grating like failed attempts to love. Yes, I see you, baby, shaking that abyss. A 4 a.m. email to a female poet. I'm sorry I could not achieve bioluminescence, but I still fight desire to be the one who distracts you versus being more than a distraction. Anything but consistency. But remember, every creative act is an attempt to communicate, and every communicative act is an attempt to love. So every creative act is an act of love. Yes?